welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I am Grace.
And I am David.
And I think I might just go have a nap because I've been up for like, you know, way earlier than normal. I guess 4:45 isn't super early for everyone, but for me it's early and that's what matters.
Yeah.
So you guys just go ahead and have the episode. I'm going to go hibernate.
Oh, okay, I guess we're just going to have the home-centric hour then. It'll be awesome.
Second hour, we'll be learning Klingon.
Yay! This is going to be the best show ever! All thanks to Oren not being here.
I've changed my mind on account of ruining your happiness.
Ah.
Okay. I don't know what that was, but it was probably rude. All right.
Shran would never do this to us.
That's true. But so first, before we do anything else, we have an email. And of course, this is from our friend Data Logan. And I asked a question last week, and no one knew the answer, but of course he did. So here we go. The topic is red shirts. And he says, red shirt Lieutenant Galloway died in The Omega Glory, but then appeared again with the same name and with dialogue in later episodes like Turnabout Intruder. My favorite episode to watch for redshirt deaths is The Apple, as Oren mentioned, especially the part where Kirk is frantically calling for Malroy on the communicator. Side note, Malroy's father helped Kirk get into the Academy. There's another little piece of canon that changed by JJ Trek. I'm not sure where that's from. Maybe that was in The Apple. I don't remember. It's been a really long time since I've watched it. That also could be from, like, a book or something. Data Logan knows way more about the soft canon of Star Trek than I do. My favorite single redshirt death is the one from Friday's Child. Kirk warns the landing party about the violent tendencies of the natives. The landing party beams down, and within seconds, a redshirt is killed by the natives for pulling a phaser on a Klingon.
Delightful.
Sticks out of my mind because of the quickness of the death, literally like 2 seconds, and because of the cool weapon the guy killed him with. And, of course, that's the episode. I think that might be, like, the only time that a redshirt ever kind of deserved what was coming to him, because, like, he beams down to, like, a diplomatic meeting and sees, like, a Klingon and then just immediately pulls a gun on him. Like, can you imagine what would happen at, like, a UN meeting if somebody did that? They're just like,
yeah.
You know, it's like,
we're
hey,
gonna
we're
let
here.
This death slide because he was an antagonistic red shirt.
Well, it's like, hey, you know, some like, I don't know, like, the French envoy comes to meet the you know, Barack Obama, and then they see, like, a British representative there, and they don't like the British, so one of their dudes, like, pulls a gun. Like, Secret Service would have murdered that guy.
And be like, you know, not cool, man. Just knock it off.
If they'd let this dude run wild, he would have started, like, the Starfleet Bay of Pigs or something.
Look, diplomatic incident, all right? It's just... you gotta act... When someone pulls a phaser, you can't always wait around to, like, hope that they got it on stun, man. Those things can blow up, like, 120 cubic meters of rock, according to the RPG stats.
That seems a little excessive for a single phaser.
It is a little excessive, but they have, like, Star Trek has always been very inconsistent over the exact stats of the phaser and what exactly it does.
Oh, and I guess when might makes right, you really need all the right you can get.
Do you think they would, Starfleet would let their officers, like, tinker with their equipment, like, make modifications to their, either their tricorder, their phaser, like, or do they have to be standard issue across the board? Everybody's the same, or can you, like, upgrade and tweak it? I don't know, maybe he added power cells, or who knows?
You get, like, a custom ride to your phaser. I mean, there's that one Voyager episode where Tuvok has wide beam stun setting that they never use ever again, so I can only assume that was a custom job, that, like, not every phaser can do that. But, you know, maybe they just put racing stripes on their phasers. We may never know the answer. But today...
Do the racing stripes make them faster?
Bedazzle. I want to bedazzle my phaser.
You know, stick some rhinestones on
there. Still
need
a hot glue gun phaser.
Well, phasers and glue guns is one of the panels that I didn't get a chance to at Star Trek Las Vegas, but it's apparently
pretty
cool.
They're a fun blog, yeah.
All right. So, there have been more Voyager recaps from Pixie, so you should look that up. Pixie's Voyager recaps, because they're really funny. And, of course, the first episode from the Redshirt Diaries is also out. In case you haven't seen that yet, you can just look it up on YouTube. It is very good. I also provided the link in the show notes to the last episode.
Oh, and first time Trekker on Twitter has gotten back to some episodes. There was kind of a lull, or you know, she had work issues, and but then I just saw her recently do like two or three episodes, and so she even asked, "When can I get back on All Things Trek? That was so much fun." So we're gonna have her back on soon.
Aw, how flattering.
We would love to have her back on whenever she is available. So
absolutely.
So for now, it is time to get on to our main topic for today, which was originally supposed to be each of our like favorite trippy episode, but then like we ended up with like 10 episodes. So I guess it's really the trippiest episodes of Star Trek that we could remember.
Well, the way I approached it was kind of like my main pick, and then I have a couple like runners up or honorable mentions that I think, you know, those were also trippy, but I have my main pick. But I think, yeah, once we got talking, there's several that we could go over.
All right. Well, since I have this one up on my show notes first, why don't we move along to David's primary pick?
Alamarine!
No!
This is the episode, Grace. We're going to talk about it now. I know you had a lot of fun watching it this morning. I certainly did.
You had a lot of fun reading about me watching it.
I did. So, David, since this is your episode, why don't you remind everyone what it's about?
The episode, if you haven't, you know, caught on by Alamarine and the subtle reference by Oren here, it's
so
DS9.
Subtle.
Yeah, exactly. DS9 episode, the 10th episode, I think, of the first season, Move Along Home. And it's just, I know it's lampooned and people have issue and it is what it is, but I dig it. I actually enjoy it. And it's a first season, you know, every show, every season of every series, they have their season one and then their memorable season one episodes that may be memorable for maybe not the best reason, but it stood out to me even from when I was first watching it the first run. I'm like, what's going on here? What, you know, there's stuff that's not explained in the episode. It's just trippy. But basically it's the Wadi. They come through the wormhole and it's the first, well actually it was set up as like the first contact from the Gamma Quadrant, but when I rewatched the episode, Sisko says, "Oh, a Vulcan ship made contact with them on the other side, and now they're coming here." So, kind of first contact was already done by the Vulcans, but it's the station's first time accepting and meeting a species from the wormhole from the other side, and it's the Wadi, and they get all their dress uniforms and their, you know, spit shine and prim and proper protocol, and they're like, "Yeah. Where's Quarks? We want the games."
Let's play Dabo already. We're tired of your dress uniforms.
Yeah, so that's a good start to the episode. And so,
Quark really does start Quark off like an original series episode, doesn't it?
It has that feel because, like you know, it's in a weird set. Like, it's not just a painted backdrop, but they're in, like, weird, colorful, weird-looking sets. And things happen that aren't explained by technobabble or science-y stuff. It just happens, and you're like, what just happened? How is this happening? But, and of course,
they all have big 60s country singer hair.
And like weird shapes and patterns just like painted on their forehead. Was that paint? Was it tattoos?
Yeah, they've got weird like tattoos on their forehead, and that's what makes them aliens. Kind of going for the low hanging fruit design wise there.
Well, and they have shiny material, like shiny patterned material for their, you know,
the lame.
Alien
Always
outfits.
With the lame.
But of course, Quark cheats them, and that kind of sets off the whole plot of this episode of, oh, you're going to cheat us. Well, let's pull out our game then, and it kind of goes on from there.
So we were asked in the chat room actually to define what we mean by trippy, and I think that's a reasonable request. What I just was thinking about it, and maybe I should have clarified this with my co-hosts, but my thought about it was that I've just meant strange episodes, like episodes that kind of, you know, make you go huh, and like get kind of make you think differently or just turn your expectations upside down, you know, things like that. Episodes that don't stick to what I would expect to happen in like a straight drama or action or comedy or what have you. That's just what I meant by trippy, and they can be good or bad.
I was just going for straight up what factor, like what am I, what? Something that is just as weird when you watch it with the dialogue as if you had it on mute.
And I kind of took it as a multiple layers of that. Partly like just like, what am I looking at? Like, what? But then also, like, you know, trippy, like mind trip, like, whoa, mind blown, like that was just far out, or, you know, so I kind of took it as multiple versions or permutations, I don't know, whatever, of trippy, like the trippiest episodes. So, and of course, one of the first ones, you know, I'm scanning in my mind, and definitely some TOS popped up, there's some definite T and G, but then the it just hit my brain like Alla Moraine, and I had to go with a Move Along Home, because it was first Alla season Moraine. we're still learning the characters, and you know, they're still developing the series, and it was just like, here's our big first alien, you know, encounter, and it has to, of course, it's on the station, not in a, on, you know, out in space or on a planet, but it was interesting. They did pull out, you know, some really involved sets. They may not have been like it's not a whole city, or it's not super crazy, but you could see there's hallways, there's, you know, rooms, and everything's in geometric shapes and painted different weird colors, and you could tell they spent
like
some time
purple
on the
set. And gold and like super over the top and alien looking.
So
visually, it's just so much like an original series episode.
Right. So the aliens are kind of like a trippy take on, like, they're not, you know, prosthetic latex prosthetics to make them look far out and crazy. They're just like, look, they basically look human. They just have the blue stuff on their forehead, the little geometric shapes and their outfits. But then they have like technology or something, like, because here's some of my like WTF or trippy moments from it, you know. And I remember that, you know, even watching it today, all the way back to when I first saw it. So they go in and they say, okay, we're going to take us to the games. They want to play Dabo. So there's the little scene of like, well, what do they use money? What do they do? So they pull out the things that they're supposed to bet on, right? Like in the TNG episode, Time Zero, Data doesn't have any money in the Old West, but he pulls off his communicator and he's like, here's gold. I could barter and use gold. And so this scene was like, so what do you guys got to play with or to bet with? They pull out sticks.
Fancy sticks.
Look, sticks, okay.
Very expensive.
And they and the way he says it, like he pulls them out, it basically looks like chopsticks, but he's like spinning it and twirling it, and he's like, they have multiple uses. And I'm like, wait, what?
Okay,
what is that supposed to
be? Hang on. I gotta interject here, okay? Alright, so this is the
back scratcher.
This is the first part of the episode that I really started to go, what? This is dumb. Because, like, this episode is really
highly cherished on our planet.
Yeah. Right, but like, so Quark is just kind of like dismissing these things that he doesn't know what they are. He's just like, I don't want that.
Well, yeah, we get a lot of cultural insensitivity sticks from Quark this episode, don't we?
Well, it's more like he just assumes they're not valuable because they're not shiny, I guess. Like, you know, lots of things.
Classic Quark.
You know, it seems like as a exploitative businessman, you would think he'd be interested to know what he could get for them before, like, discarding their value just because they didn't look pretty.
Well, the first thing was sticks. We got sticks. We don't need sticks. So then they pull out the juice, and it reminded me of, like, the old SNL, like, oh, he liked the juice. But Quark didn't like the juice. He was like, it was revolting. And they're like, this is a cherished, priceless drink, you know, beverage, and he's like, one man's priceless is another
man's
worthless.
It's like Faygo on their planet,
worthless.
I guess.
Right, so Quark can barely stomach it, and so, like, those were our best
like
things, our sticks and our juice. So he's like, well, all we got are these, and he pulls out, like, a bag and spills it, and it's like, ooh, gemstones, and, you know, if they're gonna flip it, you could almost see Quark going, like, what, rocks? You're gonna give us rocks? But, oh, no, they look sparkly and colorful, like, ooh, gems. So then the games are on.
That always makes me think, though, when you see a scene like that where they pull out shiny gems and pour them out on the table, it's like, it looks like something you'd get in a museum gift shop. And if I was an alien and if I was going to go and make contact, I'd just get like a crap ton of those and be like, yes, this is the valuable resource on our planet. Fool's gold. Yeah.
Ooh, amber. A little amber rock.
So shiny.
Yeah, I mean, very you could buy expensive a handful of those from like Spencer's Gifts in the mall for like, you know, I don't know, $20.
Well, because, and they weren't even like, you know, a faceted cut, you know, it's just like round stones.
They
pebbles.
Literally look like ones they got out of a museum gift shop.
But Quark is all enamored with it. And so it's like, okay, play
Dabo. Quark.
So we got some scenes. Then there's other, it flips to scenes of like, Odo messing with the Starfleet security guy that don't stick around for long. And so there's other parts to the episode, Sisko and Jake talking about girls, but the main point is the games. And so we cut back to, they're winning. They're just cleaning Quark out. And he's like, they just played all day, all night. Sisko goes to bed, just let him play Dabo. Then that's why Quark is like, we gotta turn the tables. And he takes away the Dabo girl who's like hosting the game and puts in a Ferengi in his place. And of course the Ferengi pushes the button under the table to rig the game, and he cheats. They catch on because they're gamers, right? They know games. So then it's like, okay, now we're gonna pull out our little box. And all of a sudden another trippy moment was they open the box and it flashes like a light, and then all of a sudden the Dabo table's gone and their apparatus is in its place. And I'm like, wait, what just happened? Are they transmuting matter or is it transport? It was just weird, like, what just happened here? But Quark doesn't seem like, where's my Dabo table? He's just like, ooh, look at this new game. And I'm like, what's going on here?
It's good to know that Quark is so easily distracted as a businessman.
This whole episode is kind of about people who are easily distracted, and like, I don't
know. Right?
Like, thank God that that security dude didn't stick around, because he's just kind of like, yeah, it didn't occur to me that anything strange was going on when none of the senior officers reported for duty.
What is it with that dude? Also, Odo shows up like, everyone's missing, and he's like, Odo!
Constable Odo! Laughing at it. But here's the thing, before we see that, that guy is laughing for nobody showing up and we know that they're missing, the game the Dabo table turns into the alien game thing, and Quark is like, ooh, let's play. But then we cut to the scene of Sisko, like, in his bed, in his pajamas or whatever, and he rolls over, and then all of a sudden the rollover continues with him in the crazy alien hallway room in full uniform. And I was like, what, did he get transported? Like, what just happened? How come he was in his bed and now he's waking up in the room in full uniform with a tricorder? And then we see the rest, Kira, Dax, and Bashir, they start running in. And it was kind of
Bashir handling the whole thing with grace and dignity.
Right. Well, that was because later we are first introduced with Sisko, and after he wakes up and gets off the floor in his uniform, he's like, computer in program. But before he says, am I in a holodeck? Before he says end program, he says computer freeze program. But he's in an empty room where nothing is happening. If you freeze that,
think of that.
If you freeze the program,
he was freezing the nothingness.
It's an empty room.
I guess he panicked.
Maybe he stopped moving. He was a holodeck the whole time.
Dun dun dun.
So that's Sisko tripping out, and I was like, I should say in program instead. But then he goes through the wall, the door and down the hallway, and that's where we see Bashir up against the wall, just screaming his head off. And he's like I'm thinking, why is he doing that? And he's like, I couldn't
medical
wake up.
Style,
I was trying to wake myself up out of this nightmare. It's like, screaming? Okay, whatever. And then,
wake up screaming a lot, Bashir? You gotta wonder.
And then that's when Kira and Dax just, run from off the, turn the corner running in. So we have four of our crew people, three Starfleet, Kira, and interestingly, there are four pieces to Quark's game, and that's when we realize, oh, wait, those people got, taken into the game. And that was another thing. At that point you realize those four people in those alien rooms and hallways are like basically transported into the game. But I'm thinking, did they get transported? I mean, it kind of somewhat gets addressed later in the episode. But at first you're thinking, did they just get transported somewhere? Is it like an interdimensional portal? Like, how are they? Oh, because the way we learned that they're gone is that Jake was supposed to get his lecture about girls from Sisko, but he goes to Odo and says, where's my dad? Like, he didn't make the meeting. And the computer says
he has to schedule meetings with his own son.
The computer says Sisko is not on the station.
Also, so let me tell you, that might have been the only kid in the entire world who ever didn't react with, like, spontaneous joy and not having to have the talk.
Right.
It just established that that's probably one of the most uncomfortable starts to an episode of Star Trek ever. Just being like, well, son, I've got to talk to you about women. See, first contact is an awful lot like a first date. You have to woo the aliens and tell them they look pretty and, oh, gotta go, sorry. And it's like, oh, thank God.
But, Dad, I already know about girls because Nog told me.
And then you gotta think about Nog and girls and you want to bleach your brain.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad by this point. I don't think we'd had the episode where Nog, like, asked his date to chew his food for him.
Oh my gosh.
Although, can I complain about something else? Yes,
yes,
I can, and I will. So it's, that's another thing that I hate about this episode is that, like, they're like, man, our four people are missing, and, like, Quark looks over at his four pieces, and he's like, oh, gasp! And it's like, wait, seriously? You just guessed that now, thinking about that?
Well,
he made that connection
real quick, huh?
Yeah,
it's just like, that doesn't seem like the first connection you'd make, and it's like, man, it's like, you know, imagine, Grace, if I burst in and was like, Grace, four of our friends are missing, and you were like, I'm playing Clue with four people and four game pieces. Oh my god, they must be in the game!
I'm playing Clue by myself? That's so sad.
But there would be other people there, Grace.
What if
your imagination.
It was Sims? Sims makes more sense.
So it seemed like such a weird leap in logic to make that it was just like, they must be in the game. Like, does that happen often on Deep Space Nine? Is that just a regular occurrence?
Quark has a very active imagination, I think we've established.
Well, the whole episode is like, unfolds with more moments of trippiness because, okay, so at first, and then, you know, Odo busts in to the game and they're realizing, oh, these are the players, so I'll take the longer path, the safer path, so they're not in danger, and he rolls the weird little dice. But then the Fallow, I think is his name, the Wadi game guy, he's like, oh, they're gonna meet the Chandra, and I'm like, dun dun dun, and it turns out to be a little girl doing hopscotch saying a rhyme to get past a force field in this room, and I'm like, oh, that's the Chandra? It's like, okay. And then, you know, they have to figure out the little puzzle of, you got to step on the right tiles, and then, you know, Kira's like, there's the door, I'm just going to walk to the door, and gets hit by the force field, and then they're like, oh, you got to do the hopscotch on the tiles on the floor that have the little design that the girl's walking on. So Bashir does it, gets hit by the force field, and Dax immediately is like, you gotta say the rhyme. So they go and do that. But then it was weird to me because...
they also have to, like, do the little dance that goes along with it while they say the rhyme and play hopscotch. And it's one of those moments when you're watching all of these actors do it that you can almost see that in their faces, them going, I went to drama school for this.
Shakespeare prepared me for this. Well, it reminded me of in, like, Indiana Jones when the clue was like, only the penitent man will pass, and he's like, oh, I got a duck because the arrow's gonna shoot. But now it's, yeah, like, nope, you got to do the little dance and say the little rhyme. So they get past the Chandra, and the little girl turns, because all the girl, she's not responding to them, right? She's only doing the rhyme, doing a little hopscotch. But once they get past it, she's like, third chap, and it's like, you know, okay. Hey, what's that? What's a shap?
Yeah, so
here's
one more thing that I'm noticing. So, like, the whole, like, Al Moraine thing, that's the part that this episode is really known for and is kind of infamous for, is that song. But, you know, heck, at least watching that is at least kind of interesting, if only because it's sort of a train wreck. Like, all the parts that
And
are
also
outs-
you can see all of the characters getting indignant, a lot of actors. It's in character for them to be like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird because the game guy says, well, only children start at the first shap. We're going to start at the second shap. And then that's where
they have kids play this game. What?
And that's where they meet the Chandra, which is this young girl. But then, so, and in the rhyme, it's Al Moraine, count to four, Al Moraine, then three more. Like, if you can see all that. And I wanted Oren to sing it for us, but I don't think he will. But maybe if we.
I do not sing.
Okay.
Also, can we say for a second how Avery Brooks just kind of, you know, He sings it. He totally sings it.
He went for it, yeah. Because the little girl was just saying it like a...
Take four more. He just, yeah.
Well, he's a like, jazz singer, came out. But so that's where it's in her little rhyme, right? That's the only time inside the game that we hear that is the little girl's rhyme. But all throughout, when they go to the fourth shap and the fifth shap, anytime there was like a successful progression, the fallow guy, in Quarks, he's like, Ala Moraine! So I could see, I don't know why he was saying that, but it was interesting, and that's memorable. But so then they meet, they have their another little, on the fourth shap, they go into this room that fills up with smoke, and they have to drink, and it's like, you know, figuring out a puzzle. But then later on, there's like, oh, that was a, Quark is like, well, let's get them out of here quick, we'll take the dangerous route. And then it's like, oh, that's bad, because the people end up in a cave, and that's not good. And then the cave has a ledge, which is never good.
In Star Trek, it's never good if you end up in a cave.
In a cave with a ledge.
Well, there's only one cave in, like, all of Star Trek, and it's a really dangerous cave. Like, there's, like, you know, all these pitfalls and, like, the wall shakes. And at one point, the actors just throw themselves off the ledge because they're so tired of being there. You know, like, that's...
The whole cave is shaking and there's, like, collapsing. And Dax gets hurt and is like, go, you guys save yourself. And, like, no, we're all going. And then, of course, at that point, they all have to go over the edge. And you think, they're going to die. And then inside, it cuts to Quarks and they just flash of light. They just appear by the bar, all four of them. Even Bashir, who got, like, oh, remember Bashir was like abducted or taken by the floaty white, like light bulb looking light spheres or whatever they were. So we think, oh, Bashir got killed because the fallow guy like knocks over one of the pieces and then we see, oh, that's Bashir. But then they're all done and they're like, you know, angry. But he's like, it's just a game. You never were ever in any danger. And it's like, oh, dun-da-da. It's like, then it's over. It's just kind of it's a fun episode, but it's like weird. And, oh, here's the other thing. Odo's like, we got to infiltrate the ship. So Odo goes over, and he finds a room, like a door. He opens the door, and it's like just blasting out white light, right? And he's like, recoils from it, but he's like, no, I got to save the people. He rushes into the room, and then he just like, again, in a white flash of light, appears at the Quark's bar where the game is going, and the fallow guy just kind of nods and smirks at him like, but what happened? Like, okay, so there was a room filled with light. Odo tries to walk in but gets transported to Quark's. Again, is that transporter technology? Is it like Stargate dimensional portals? It was just weird. Like, what is this?
I think the writers call that a room full of plotwavium.
I
think it's plotwavium.
All right, so we've gotten
it was a room full of a wizard did it.
Basically.
That's kind of in early season one, DS9, that's kind of one of my favorite episodes to watch because it's just fun but goofy and weird and like, what is this?
So I'm not going to lie, I really do not like this episode.
Not really.
Not at all.
It's season one fun. That's a catchphrase now. We got to do season one fun.
Oh my God. I hope that doesn't become a catchphrase.
We could just call it season fun.
Grace, why would you do this to me? But so, okay.
Because I love you and must hurt you.
So the parts inside the game are like, all right, this is dumb, but at least it's funny, right? Like, you know, watching them do the Ala Moraine dance is like, oh my God. They feel the pain, and that's kind of, you know, I can have fun watching other people in pain, because I'm a terrible person. And then, like, the part where they, like, throw themselves off the cliff when they're supposed to be knocked down by like rumbling and shaking, like, okay, that's also funny. But the parts outside where like Odo is dealing with like security officer McDweeb and like Quark and they're like yelling at Quark because he like cheated at gambling and so that somehow makes this all his fault, it's like, no, the guys the Wadi like kidnapped you and basically assaulted you and are really rude dudes. This is not Quark's fault. Like, even if he theoretically provoked them somehow,
I just remembered.
But we
another
can't say
thing.
We learned a lesson if it's not Quark's fault.
I just remembered another like a trippy moment, like a WTF moment. Remember at the beginning when they like pull out the fancy box and like, ooh, sticks. They have many uses, right? And Quark is like, whatever. Later, once the game is starting, they pull out those same sticks and they're just like hitting them together. And I'm like, that's
They're
one
using
of your
them to
uses?
clap. It looks like they're also exchanging them to bet with each other.
Yeah, but here's the last thing I'll
Many
say.
Many uses.
It was trippy because, you know, what's going on here. But they also, a quote that stuck out was, at one point, the guy says, like, something's going to happen or they're going to meet the Chandra or something. I forget what sparked it. But then Quark goes, is that good? Is that bad? And to make it trippy, Fallow goes, neither, both. Some people will never understand, but to some people it's child's play. And I'm like, what is he saying? Like, what? I'm tripping out. Is it good? Is it bad? It's both. It's neither.
It's
and
just
I was
weird.
Like, it was, yeah, crazy, trippy trick.
I really hope that this whole thing was like a bet. Like when the Wadi left, someone was like, hey, follow. I bet you can't just, you know, punk these Federation dudes for an entire first contact mission. And he was like, yo, you just watch me. Those guys will not know what hit them. And he's just talking
that
nonsense.
That was the real game all along.
Yeah, he's just talking nonsense and putting them in games and choking them and then, like, blaming
gonna
it on
Quark.
Gonna
wave my arms around real dramatic and wear a funny outfit.
Kira
we'll totally
was,
go for it.
Kira was not having it. I mean, Bashir and Daxum were almost like, yeah, let's play this game. Let's figure it out. Kira was like, I did not sign up for this. I'm not having it.
Kira's
I
like,
love
I
how when she gets angry, she refers to herself as a Bajoran administrator, and it's just kind of like, really? You were a freedom fighter. You were an undercover terrorist, and that's what you're considering yourself right now, Kira.
Yeah, and also as a bit of a games critic myself, I play a lot of games, a lot of board games.
This game was awesome, huh?
Best game.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of connection between what's happening in the game versus what's happening with the die rolling. Like, Quark really just rolls dice. It's kind of like he's playing Monopoly. He doesn't really have much in the way of choices, and it's very unclear, like, what happens if they don't succeed at the riddle. Do they just stop? And then, like, is that Quark's fault? Like, what's going on? Is Quark just rolling randomly to determine what their encounter is going to be? Like, is he just got like a GM screen that he's rolling on? It seems unclear what part of this is really Quark's decision.
Well, it kind of did seem like he did the one roll and the guy was like, oh, they're going to meet the Chandra, the little girl doing the rhyme, based on what Quark rolled. But then at one point, at each level, at the start of each level, or, you know, they're going to the fourth shop or whatever, he would ask Quark the risky shortcut road or the safer long road. And, you know, at first Quark's like, we got to protect our people, go the long, safe route. But then he's like, let's get this over with. Let's do the shortcut. And that's when people start falling off cliffs and stuff.
All right. Well, that was more in depth than I thought we were going to go on Move Along Home. But
Alamarain!
Thank you, David. Grace, what was your episode?
Well, I'm going to go for kind of the obvious one here. It's a Voyager episode, and I know it's everyone's favorite, and it involves newts. Space newts.
Space newts.
I'm talking about Threshold.
Oh.
Threshold, really?
It's a trip.
All right, okay.
It met my necessity of being something that's just as weird when you have the dialogue muted as it is when you are watching it and knowing what they're saying. Either way, it doesn't make any sense.
Was it?
And
that
it's just,
went,
so, didn't they, what?
Didn't it all get
what?
Started because they, like, went warp 13 or something? Like, that
or
was...
They went so something. Fast they turned into lizards. How much trippier can you get?
Too
it's
fast
worse than going
for...
plaid.
It's too fast for mammals. Must be newts now.
Newts!
So, alright, so this episode, like, the premise is basically that they find a way to go to Warp Infinity, because in this episode, that's what Warp 10 is, even though we've had ships in Star Trek that went faster than Warp 10 before. So, you know, continuity, who needs it?
Well,
which is
and
ironic.
We know about Warp 11, because they're a great band, but then I forgot what Warp that they went in Threshold.
Well said.
Like, in All Good Things, which is an episode that Brannon Braga co-wrote with Ron Moore, they went Warp 13, so it's, like, weird that Brannon Braga also wrote Threshold and apparently just forgot that Warp 13 was a thing. You know, so then they were like, he was like, let's go Warp 10, that's infinite velocity for some reason, and then they do it, because they just can, because why not, and then Paris turns into a newt, and there's a lot of, like, weird stuff going on in the middle. Like, when I first watched this episode, I was very young, And I honestly thought that we were all going to evolve into newts. Like, I thought that was a thing that was happening, because they said that this was following the natural course of human evolution. And I was like, I don't want to evolve into a newt. That's the worst.
You're going to be a newt, Orin, and you're going to like it. You're going to have to deal, okay?
I was not happy. And then I found out that it was all, like, complete bull honky. And it was like, oh, all right, well then. That's good.
So... to remind everybody, what happens once they are newts? I mean, that kind of just stops there, or what happens?
Oh, I guess we do need to talk about that. Grace, it's your
episode.
It
turns Janeway into a newt also, and they have newt babies.
What?
Newt babies! Baby newts!
Wait, because this is Star Trek, and, you know, in a way it's just television, but because it's Star Trek and he's dead, Jim, but oh wait, he's back next episode, or what... They don't stay newts, right? They somehow fix it?
They're able to just instantly fix them and they turn right back into people again.
That's what? Just a thing that he can do, like, in a log entry.
Everything's better now. Okay, the end. Bye.
For one of the weirdest moments in the episode to me, this is not, like, even close on the list of things that are wrong with it, but one of the weirdest moments is when Paris, like, captures Janeway, because he's escaping, and he's all, like, part lizard and stuff, and he's, like, running away from, you know, from the ship. He, like, meets Janeway in the turbo lift, and he, like, chest bumps her, and she gets knocked out. And, like, that's, like, the weirdest way to knock someone out I've ever seen on a television show.
He knows bro-fu, I guess.
Yeah,
chest bumping, fist bumping, he knows it all.
He doesn't stun her, like, even though they have he has a phaser in his hand, and he doesn't, like, hit her in the head, which, I mean, granted, in real life, that probably wouldn't work, but in movies and TV, that's typically how it works. He's just like, ugh, chest bump! And she's like, I'm unconscious now. And he's like, does she have an off switch in her sternum? I mean, that's kind of an odd place to keep one.
Uh-oh. I like what Curiously Queer says, and I don't know if that explains it, but... I'm down for that, but wait a minute. So they undo it. They're not newts no more. But what about the baby newts? Do they just leave them? Do they kill them? Like, they're just left on the planet?
Janeway and Paris are deadbeat newt parents, which is really sad when you think about it.
Oh, what if there's a follow-up episode or fan fiction or a novel or something where the newt babies grow up and evolve and then come back and then where they get, I don't know. That's
why didn't you love me, Daddy? That kind of thing.
Why isn't there a novel about that? They have, like, written a novel about literally every other hanging plot thread in Star Trek. Why not that one?
Because everyone wants to forget that it happened.
That does seem to be the attitude in general.
Right. Right.
Also, just, like, one of my favorite parts is, like, when he dies, when Paris dies, they're just kind of like, eh. Yeah, we don't know what happened. I guess we'll wait.
Sucks to suck. Paris is dead.
We'll wait until morning to, like, figure out what happened, because, of course, he comes back during the night, right?
Well, they're so used to Harry Kim dying constantly that it's just kind of become old hat.
Yeah, I guess. And then, like, you know, he just puts a tarp over him. It's like, oh, okay. Not gonna put him in stasis or anything? No, just gonna leave that body out.
Send him
to
Neelix. He'll put the meat to good use.
Well, the replicators can,
by the way,
like,
don't
reconstitute.
Ask what we're eating tomorrow. Just don't.
Mystery meat in the Salisbury steak, but you know the replicator can just
reconstitute
matter. Oh, there you go.
That's probably what he would call it, Grace. That it's probably what would end up happening. And maybe that's what happened to all the other red shirts who disappeared.
Oh man, that makes more sense than I want it to.
So I'm not sure how much more there is to say about Threshold. This is like, what is happening? Like, because you're right, Grace. It does have a very, like, you know, it goes from the warp 10 thing is like the first two acts is them going warp 10, and then you're like, wait, the episode keeps going? Like, and then the rest of the episode is like only vaguely related to them going warp 10, and it's just like
that's kind of this episode in a nutshell. It's just still going, still going.
Did the little rabbit with the tambourines, like, scroll by, like, roll by the hallway?
It keeps going and going and going.
Oh, wow.
I haven't really
seen this. Getting awfully 90s in here.
Well, it's Voyager, but, I haven't seen this one.
How much more 90s do you want to get?
On the UPN network. I've seen it, but I haven't seen it as much as Move Along Home, so I kind of am tempted to go back and watch it after this, but kind of not.
Don't worry, you don't gotta. So, all right, since you guys decided to put us through Threshold and Move Along Home,
Alamo
guys,
Lane.
And oh my god, Threshold. I'm so glad I didn't rewatch Threshold this morning. Oh, it would be so...
You don't need to, really.
Before Oren gets to his, we were like talking on, what was it, Skype or Facebook. We were chatting a little bit early before the show, and at one point Oren says, "I'm watching Move Along Home. I hope you're happy, David." And I was like, Alamo Rain. Yeah, awesome.
Proof that David has won the game today.
I go out. I do try my best to keep my co-host happy. So you guys.
So moving along home then.
No, not home. We're going to a different one. Okay, so this one is actually good. This is a good episode. That's trippy. One of my favorites. I was originally going to go with the TOS episode, and we'll probably have time to get to that. But I was reminded of this one, so I decided to do it instead, which is The Thaw. Which might be my favorite Voyager episode. It is a season 2 episode in which they discover that a couple of people who are in like stasis pods because their planet underwent some kind of disaster, and to survive it they got into these stasis pods, and they are being basically their minds are all hooked up to a virtual reality simulator, and you know, long story short, they figure out that they're all being kept there by like a sentient computer program, which is sort of the manifestation of their fear. And it's this clown, and he
is a very forbidden planet. Yeah.
Yeah, he is so terrifying.
Oh yeah, Janeway's wacky clown adventure.
Yeah, it's like I love that episode, and like the like part of it, the thing that you notice immediately, one of the things that makes this episode work so well is because the whole thing, like the whole in-universe, because they can go in there and it's like virtual reality, the whole thing is like giant circus party. And there's like everything is feels alive, and like the extras, at first you're like, where did they get these extras? They're so like vivid and their performance is so like, you know, energetic. And then you looked up, oh, those are Cirque du Soleil performers. That makes sense. And I can't imagine I can't imagine that was cheap, but I'm glad they did it, because they're in such, like, they have such good coordination with the actor playing the clown, so, like, you know, when he'll make, like, a joke, and they'll all react to it with this really perfect timing, and the whole thing is just so surreal, but of course it's also completely terrifying, which is the point, right? Because he's a manifestation of fear, and it's just like,
yep.
Oh, like, you know,
clown
I've seen the...
Clown with an army? That sounds like fear to me.
And, like, I've seen the episode before, but it has been so long that when I watched it this time, I was like, oh my god, I felt fear. Like, I was concerned that the characters of Voyager, who I do not normally care much for, were going to die at the hands of this clown. And, like, the fact that he's trapped inside a computer program that, like, they wouldn't normally even be a threat to them because he can't, like, shoot them outside of his computer program. But it's just like, it's such a good episode. And... It also features some of the best...
Clowns!
Stop it. Stop it, Grace. Stop it.
Clowns!
Like, I don't even normally have, you know, a fear of clowns. Like, normally they're, like, you know, they're just clowns, whatever. But this guy, just the way that he has such charisma. Michael McKean, I think is his name, as yep. pointed out by Curiously Queer in the chat room.
Now, was he Lenny or was he Squiggy? I think he was Lenny, right?
I'm sorry, I don't get the reference, David. I'm the worst.
He was on Laverne and Shirley? Really? Dang.
Yep.
Wow. Talk about range.
Yeah, I mean, he is an amazing actor, and just the presence he brings to the stage, and his, like, you know, his like, Cirque du Soleil friends, basically. Like, they just make it real. It's not, you know, I've come to expect from, especially later Trek, like, when they have a bunch of extras, I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, fine. Because, you know, the extras they bring on are generally... not, shall we say, the greatest, and they very often just seem kind of lifeless, but no, oh my god, these guys, it's like they are professional circus performers or something, because, you know, they are. And, you know, it's not a every episode of Voyager that can get me to care whether or not Harry Kim dies. Like, you know, because he dies so often,
He does it so often that you stop caring is the thing.
Yeah, but, like, in this episode, I was honestly afraid for Harry Kim. Like, the part where the clown, like, straps him down to a gurney and has, like, the scalpel, and he's like, and he was just about to make the cut right here. And then the doctor shows up and is like, sorry, you're holding that wrong. And it's just the perfect way to break the tension. And, of course, this is also a heavy Robert Picardo episode, which is great and perfect. And it's, oh my
you
god.
Fight a clown with a clown.
Yeah, totally.
Easy.
This episode also gives us one of Janeway's best performances in Voyager, I think. Kate Mulgrew really, you know, sank her teeth into this one. And, like, Janeway, not only do we see Janeway questioning her decisions, which is something that she should have done way more often in my mind, they were always sort of very, like, you know, more than any of the other captains, except for Archer, I guess. Archer never questioned his decisions either, because he's terrible. But the good Starfleet captains were always the ones who had, like a seed of, like, did I do the right thing when they had to make these kind of decisions? And, you know, we get to see Janeway doing that, and then they start to, like, question the nature of fear, which is just, you know, it's just great. I love how they do that. You know, and of course the end, as has been pointed out in the chat room, where Janeway's like, I'm afraid, where the clown is like, I'm afraid, and Janeway's like, I know. It's, it's so good. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And there are even, like, small things that they do in this episode. Like, they establish that the clown has, like, there's, like, a 2-minute delay between when he can, like, read their thoughts, and they use that to, like, great effect in the episode. You think it's just, like, a throwaway thing, but it comes back to you. And, like, Neelix isn't even annoying in this episode, which is a really major accomplishment for Neelix. It's just, like, you know, this episode.
As far
so
as Neelix-based accomplishments go, yeah.
So good. Of course, the problem with talking about episodes that are good is that they don't take up as much time as you know, Move Along Home does. But because I can only say this is good for so long. So I'd love to hear David or Grace, if you guys have any reflections on the thaw before we move on. I'd love to hear them.
Clowns.
Well, I put a link into the chat room just in case people, you know, maybe remember the episode, but maybe not. But I like the look of the clown. They didn't go with the classic, like, Bozo the Clown, Ronald McDonald. So that made it even more creepy, you know, like, you could definitely tell he's a clown, but it's like a twist on it, an updated, a future, whatever you want to call it. It's not just like, you know, the orange hair and the red round nose thing. So, but yeah, I remember this episode. I've only seen it maybe once or twice, but it stood out and be, you know, trippy. It was definitely some trippy Trek.
Yeah, I just, you know, I thought it was, and the fact, like I said, the fact that they went even further and, like, you know, did some actual, like, discussion of what fear is and, like, what it's for is, like, what really elevated the episode. Like, it was good before they started doing that, and then that made it, like, a really, you know, that took it over the edge into being, like, you know, like, almost a philosophical episode. Or, you know, I will even say it is a philosophical episode, and I love philosophical episodes of Star Trek. Now, David, you said you had a TOS runner-up that I'm sure some people would love to hear, because we talked about, like we had two Voyagers and a DS9 so far, so I'm sure we have TOS fans who are wondering why we're not doing more of that.
Yeah, and then I think earlier when we were talking off-air, Grace had a couple TNG candidates, but the one that I remember as a kid was, like, trippy to me. Like, I didn't even understand the concept of, like, you know, tripping on a substance or, like, you know, whoa, that's a mind trip. But it was trippy. It was trippy to me even back then as a kid, because I watched these in the, you know, I grew up in the 70s, so I was watching them as before I was a teenager. And then, of course, I grew up with it later on. But I started off watching TOS as a kid in the 70s, and then there was the animated series and, you know, TOS reruns. And then, but then later, as I got older and I had, like, more life experience, but also more, you know, just awareness and knowledge of history, the episode got even more trippy because I knew more about, you know, what was behind it. But it was basically Spectre of the Gun. Some people know what I mean right off the bat. Others are like, what are you talking about?
I think I see what you're saying there.
So basically it starts off the Enterprise. It starts off with just tiny little, you know, trippy moments, like, why is this that doing that? And then it builds on it. But the episode, excuse me, the episode starts on the bridge, and they're scanning something, right? And the first sign that things are going to get trippy, and this is season 3, so just that, what, you know, for what that is. But Kirk is asking Spock, like, you know, analysis and what's the results and all that. But he's calling him science officer. He's like, science officer, what is this stuff over here? Whatever. And Spock just does his natural delivery of his response. And Kirk is like, thank you, science officer. And I'm like, he's not calling him Spock. He's not saying commander, because obviously you could refer to somebody by their rank, like, you know, thank you, ensign or whatever. He's calling him science officer. And I'm like, that's just weird. But it goes on that they're scanning something, and then they get approached by this multicolored crystal spinning probe thing. And I'm like,
not too uncommon for TOS, actually.
Yeah,
not really. That's kind of par for the course.
And I was watching it on Netflix, and it's the remastered, so it looks really awesome, you know, crisp and clear and cool. But it's like, you know, the center part has like jet, like, you know, pyramid things coming off of it. Then there's like rectangular stuff on the top and the bottom, and they're spinning in different directions. But it's like clear crystal, but there's like multicolored lights all sparkling all throughout it, changing color. And I'm like, whoa, that's trippy. What is that thing? It turns out it's a probe. Of course, it's a probe. And it says, aliens, you are not supposed to come into this part of space. Turn away. Go away. Right. So that's kind of trippy. Like, this probe is just talking to them. But the trippy thing continues because, oh, Vulcan. And Kirk is like, no, it was English. And Chekhov goes, it was doing Russian. And Uhura goes, no, it was Swahili. So they're all hearing the probe talking in their own, like, native language. And that was just kind of trippy because, you know, that shows that Chekhov still knows the Russian language. Uhura still knows Swahili. And Spock speaking Vulcan the whole time, or he's speaking English? But that was just kind of trippy. But of course,
although I'd like to point out, I don't think Chekhov actually speaks Russian. I think he just speaks fake English. Like, I think that's what his parents spoke in the home.
Wessels.
Oh, but that would be so sad. He was raised to speak bad English.
I stole that joke from a Simpsons episode, by the way, just in case anyone didn't know.
So in true Star Trek Enterprise fashion, this giant, sparkly, multicolored probe says, go away. And of course, they're like, let's go down to the planet and investigate what this is all about. So they beam down to the planet, and, you know, it shows a view of the rocky, you know, planet, and Scotty apparently has good coordinates to beam down. They beam down, and it's all fog. It's just smoke and fog, and they're like, what's going on? Your transporter screwed up. And it was also trippy because there were no red shirts. It was all primary cast. We had Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Chekhov, and Scotty. So it was a full landing party. And the little alien head comes out of the cloud and goes, I told you to go away. You didn't listen. Now you're going to be punished. So in a way, it kind of reminded me of Gozer when it's saying, you know, choose the form of your destruction. Because the alien probes Kirk's mind, and it says, we're going to take the form of your destruction from your, you know, path, Kirk. And then quick cut, edit, all the smoke is gone, and then they're in a crazy reproduction of an old West town. But it's like only half the buildings are there, like a false front, and it's weird. So already you're tripping, like, it ain't an actual, like, bonanza time. It's like, you know, the colored backdrop and, like, only false fronts of the buildings, and you're like, what's going on? Their phasers turned to six shooters. And as a kid, I'm like going, what's going on? They're just in the old West now. It turns out they're in Tombstone, Arizona in like 1881.
18 shoot o'clock or something.
Bang o'clock.
And it turns out that this alien decided that for their punishment, the way they're going to die is not the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but they're going to die reliving the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Which, quick, like, side note, wouldn't it have been cool if they'd gotten that out of Sulu's brain? Wouldn't that have been a nice little bit of continuity with the fact that like, Sulu
neat,
was into guns? Because we've never seen any really indication that Kirk was like into Westerns, that like he cared about them at all.
That was the other thing. At the beginning, when Kirk is calling Spock science officer, Sulu wasn't on the bridge. We had Chekhov at the helm, but in Sulu's place was some other white guy, which kind of so didn't
some,
even have...
Some guy.
But the way that...
Boy,
the alien...
he's really some guy, isn't he?
And he didn't even have dialogue or anything. He was just looking perplexed or whatever at that moment. But the alien scanned Kirk's like mind or DNA or whatever it was, because it turned out that Kirk was like, this seems familiar. Why do these names and location and Tombstone? Kirk says, oh yeah, my ancestors like settled the West, and somehow he's connected to the what gang was it? I had to look it up. But basically,
the Clantons? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something
because
like that.
The other, the other people that were going to kill them was like Wyatt Earp, the Earp family. So that was, it's like the whole Tombstone, OK Corral shootout. So that was in Kirk's history or Kirk's ancestor past. But it goes even further, you know, okay, it's already trippy enough. But then Sulu, I mean, Chekhov, he's all into it because there's some girl, like, you know, saloon girl that wants to kiss on him all the time. So he's all into that. I think it's Chekhov. He gets killed. He's dead. And so he's dead Jim time. But then we find out the bullets only kill you if you believe they'll kill you. If you know and believe that they're just an illusion, you won't die. But
well,
if you
as
believe...
someone who's been raised exclusively on, like, 90s action movies, I know bullets can't kill me, so I'd be fine.
Well, especially, like, the A-Team, where they unload Uzis and M16s and nobody ever gets hit. But so that's just
yeah,
the
like
trippy
they do.
Thing. So it's only in your mind. And so that was, like, an actual mind trip. Like, some of the episode was just trippy, but then that's, like, the mind trip of it. It's like, you know, your mind over matter, like, your belief creates reality. So if you know you're not going to get hurt, you don't believe it, the bullets won't hurt you. So that was like, as a kid, I was like, whoa, what's going on with this track? And then, oh, that's so cool, it's in your mind. So that was my TOS runner-up, Spectre of the Gun.
Yeah, and that one is interesting. It's one of those we must make contact with these people at like any cost, right? Because the aliens are like, please go away. We don't want to talk to you. And Kirk's like, no, we are going to make contact with you guys. We will spread our peaceful ways to you by force if necessary. And the aliens are very like...
they will shove peace down your throat.
Like, it kind of reminded me of like a railroady GM, because they're like, all right, you guys are in Tombstone. You've got a gunfight. They're going to try to kill you. And Kirk and company are like, oh man, we could make like knockout gas because we know how to make knockout gas. And then we wouldn't have to kill them. And the GM was like, no, gunfight. You have to do a gunfight. Your gas doesn't work, okay? It's broken gas or something. You know, whatever.
We do find out that Scotty had not had bourbon before, but he started liking it.
Well, everyone likes bourbon.
Yeah, it's Scotty bourbon. Was like, you could get used to this. And then McCoy is using it as a, like a, you know, antiseptic for Kirk's... injury or something. There he got Kirk got punched in the mouth, of course, and so
like you do,
and he's like, you know, rubbing, like wiping his mouth the way you would think, oh, there's like fake blood, and he's wiping the blood, but there was never any blood on his mouth or lips, but he was still wiping his lip like he had blood. And that's when Bones put the bourbon on his cut that you never see because it ain't there, and he's like, ow, what is that? And then Scotty's like drinking it, going, oh, I could get used to this.
I find it hard to believe Scotty never drank bourbon. We saw how much alcohol he had in his quarters in that one episode.
Right. Where he saved the day with his rampant alcoholism.
It was an interesting concept with the whole, like, your mind makes it real kind of thing. Like, they'd use that later for shows like movies like The Matrix. And The Thaw,
yeah,
actually, was kind of based on that same idea, where, like, they can die in the program, they die for real, because if your mind thinks it's real, you know, you can die from being overstressed. Like, that, you know, that is a thing that can happen. Like, you can just get a heart attack from being, you know, from being way too stressed out. Although, that is something that just occurred to me, is that...
in theory, yeah.
Minor plot issue with The Thaw is that the people who get killed by the clown, like, they have a heart attack. I'm pretty sure that they could resuscitate those people. Like, they've cured far worse than heart attacks on Star Trek, even without Seven's nanobros.
Yeah, you can perform CPR on someone if they're having a heart attack, right?
Or
something,
you know,
I don't know.
Put him in the organ regenerator, you know, do
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that thing.
All right, so I have another TOS trippy episode, which really involves one concept that the rest of it all flows out of, and I will put you guys to the test on this one. So the episode is This Side of Paradise. You guys remember that episode?
Oh, Spock gets high on spores and slaps Kirk around.
He does, which is great to watch. And he's in a tree,
yep.
And he's smiling. But the premise of this episode is that Kirk is kind of harshing on everyone's mellow, basically. That's the premise, because the Enterprise has to go to this... for some reason, they send the Enterprise to evacuate colonists who are all supposed to be dead. Like, I don't understand why they did that exactly. Because, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to this planet to evacuate these colonists because of Berthold rays. And Spock's like, yeah, by the way, the Berthold rays, like, 99% have already killed all of them. There's no chance they could still be alive. And they're like, okay, we'll go anyway. And they go, and they're still alive. And like, we have to evacuate you because of the Berthold rays, which are not killing you. But you still have to leave. And, you know, it doesn't occur to him that maybe they should, you know, not do that. But no, he's going to stick with his orders. And then he gets really mad because they haven't, like, grown a food surplus. It's like, these people are practicing subsistence agriculture. How dare they? He gets really mad at them, and they don't, like, have machinery or cows. He's really mad about them not having cows either. And then we find out that the reason why they're so happy and they're all super healthy and they love
everything.
Where
are they going to get their calcium, Jim?
Where are they even going to get that from? Is that there are these plants which were sent over directly from the props department and don't look anything like the local flora, but whatever, that like put these spores in your face. And they apparently the spores not only make you immune to
super... They don't
just
put them in your face, they squirt them in your face very sensually.
Yeah, you know, it's you play, you know, they like to play some nice music first, maybe buy you dinner. But usually they skip that part cuz you know, they got time's a wasting. And so then they basically, this not only makes you immune to space radiation, but it also makes you super healthy and super happy. Like it makes you, you know, content like permanently, and there's no like negative side effects. In fact, there are only positive side effects cuz you're healthy. But you're not like a weird zombie. You can just kind of do whatever you want. Like, you know, McCoy decides he wants to go have mint juleps. And Spock is like, I'm going to have a relationship
and
with this lady.
Be super southern.
Yeah, this is the most southern. And you can tell this lady is pretty because they keep doing soft focus shots. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell if they didn't do that. You know, so thanks, Star Trek. And really, you know, Sulu's just like, yeah, I'll do some farming. That sounds like fun. You know, whatever. But Kirk is just, like, super mad about this and is not going to let this stand because, man, they're not building spaceships or anything, and that's wrong. So, guys, this episode, of course, is notable for a lot of things. As Grace pointed out, Kirk gets punched by Spock a bunch, and Spock is in a tree, and really, who doesn't love that? But here's my question to the two of you. If this planet existed and, like, you could go there, would you? Would you go and take the spores?
Not really. I mean,
no?
You're super happy and peppy like that. You look like a jackass.
Okay. All right. David, what about you?
I don't know. Because it depends on if you're just going to go there and like get refreshed and revitalized and you feel like all the stress is gone and you're just happy. That's cool. That's one thing. But if it starts, you know, really affecting you to just change your perspective, your philosophies, and out your whole personality... Like Spock, just, you know, climbing trees and hanging upside down, laughing. And I don't know if I'd want to take it that far. So maybe, like, if I could... Well, because I remember the spray of the spores, like, that's a lot. Maybe, like, give me, a quarter dose. Or I don't know. It just seems like it could be managed better, maybe.
It's a little much, yeah.
The way you just get so loaded in your face with the... I don't know. Because then what if it's like, you know, if you take too much LDS and it's like, I'm ready for this to be over, but like, nope, the spores are going to make you happy for like, you know, 3 more days. And you're like, but I'm done. I want to go home. Probably not.
Apparently, I'm going to be alone on Spore Planet. I would be there so fast. I mean, you know, this
How
is
fast?
From...
How fast would you be there?
The fastest. Like, however fast my ship could go, it would be that fast. I might steal another ship to go faster. Because I mean, and
it seems like it seems good, you know. It sounds good.
I mean, let me put it this way: like, I'm someone I don't drink because I don't like the effects of alcohol, and you know, I'm not exactly into, you know, mind altering substances by any means. But if you look at this stuff, it doesn't like make you crazy or loopy or anything. It just kind of makes you feel content. Like, it gets rid of all of your like stress hormones and. The gnawing feeling that you have to be doing something right now, and it allows you to survive. Like, those colonists are like growing food and have a functioning society. It's not like they're just sitting around all day staring into space. So it's not, you know, it isn't like zombie juice. It's just kind of, it's basically you have achieved a state that theoretically we're all working towards, which is that we're actually happy.
You know what this just reminded me? Like, it obviously is different, but there's similarities in a way, maybe like a early pre-version of it. Almost sounds like the Nexus, where you go in, all you're happy, all you get all you want to do. You're going to jump the horse over the little ravine over and over and over. You're going to have Christmas trees and whatever. But is that really the life? Are you really fulfilling a good life? And then, you know, if something happens and you leave, it's like you're going to spend all your time trying to get back to that planet. Like Soren is like, I got to get back to the Nexus. I don't know. It sounds good and it's interesting, but at the same time, it's like, how good is it really? I don't know. Maybe it depends on your race. Like, the humans maybe are loving it, where Spock, it's like, if you would ask Spock before he goes to the planet, like, hey, Spock, do you want to be hanging upside down on trees and skipping and laughing? And Spock would probably be like, I don't want to do that. You put him down there and get spores in the face, and now he's having a good time doing that. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting dilemma or question.
Sure.
Spores in the face.
You should definitely have a choice, right? Like, you shouldn't be forced to do it, which is
Spock's kind of coerced into the whole thing, which makes it kind of ill.
Although, in fairness, the only reason the colonists do that is because Kirk is, like, threatening to make them leave for no reason. Like, you know, they're like, he's like, I have to evacuate you so you won't be killed by the Berthold Rays. And it's like, the Berthold Rays are clearly not killing us, so why do we have to leave? But here's the thing. There's a couple of points that I would like to address about these spores, because I am, like, the spore champion, all right? I got some spores to sell you. So, David, you pointed out that it's kind of similar to the Nexus. And you're right. It is. It is similar to the Nexus, with a couple of major differences. One, you don't have to fly through terrible space ribbon to get there, so that's an advantage. But it also doesn't seem to instill you with the same, like, addiction that the Nexus does. Like,
it'll wear off after a while, right?
Well, like, the Nexus, like, the people who were in the Nexus clearly have, like, this intense longing to go back to it, where, like, you know, that basically, like, Guinan was able to conquer it through, you know, strength of will, but Soren, he was clearly, like, he could never be happy again after being in the Nexus. Like, the Nexus just made real life seem like the worst.
Well, hold on. Here's my little quick theory on the Nexus.
Yeah.
Soren was, like, addicted and obsessed, and I have to get back. I'm going to kill planets and stars to get back, right? Guinan, mm-hmm. or the little the remnant, the shade, you know, shadow of Guinan that was still there, she was warning Picard, or I think, yeah, she was like, if you go there, you know, you're going to get caught up. You're not going to want to come back. So clearly they're both Elorian, right? The Guinan species.
Right.
They're like, you're going to love it. You're going to get addicted. You're not going to want to leave. You're going to always want to go back. Kirk and Spock go in and they're like, wow, this is awesome. Wait, this ain't real. Let's go home. So I think it kind of was like a different effect if you were a different race.
Yeah, it depends who you are going in.
Well, frankly, the idea that Kirk would ever be fall for the Nexus, I don't believe it. Kirk's not happy if he's not struggling. Like, you know, that was part of that message is throughout TOS and into even Star Trek V managed to get that message about Kirk. Like, Kirk is not happy if he's happy, right? Like, Kirk needs to have something unhappy to try to solve in order to be, you know, a complete person. And I also want to address a couple of points from the chat room, if you don't mind. Shran mentioned that making Spock punch Kirk isn't a negative side effect, and I would argue that wasn't a side effect of the spores. That was just Kirk being, like, you know, deliberately provoking Spock, and then, because the
if
spores...
If Kirk can't be happy, no one can be happy.
Right, exactly. And because the spores, basically, they eliminate the need for Spock to have emotional control. Like, you'll notice that because Vulcans supposedly have all of these really powerful emotions underneath, and you'll notice that when Spock goes to Spore Planet, he doesn't, like, become like a raging volcano of emotion. He just kind of is able to experience his emotions normally. So, you know, I'd argue that wasn't a side effect exactly. I think that was just Spock being able to let down his guard and then Kirk taking advantage of him. And then Curiously Queer mentioned that my description at least sounded kind of like anti-anxiety drugs. And, you know, there's a reasonable comparison to be drawn there, with the difference being that, you know, at least my understanding is that many anti-anxiety drugs have side effects, and of course they're expensive, whereas these are free and don't have any negative side effects. Like, you know, they don't have any effect on your health except for a positive one. They don't make you feel fuzzy headed or anything. It's just the best. And I mean, granted, it's an artificial best. But you know, hey, if that's what I got to do to arrange the chemicals in my brain, then sure, I'm down for it. Why not? Now, Grace, David and I have both done two. Do you have another one you'd like to bring up before we wrap up the show today?
There is one I would like to bring up, and that is another obvious one, kind of, but it involves everyone devolving and acting weirdly puppet-like. I am talking, of course, about Genesis from TNG, where everyone somehow ends up devolving, and Troy turns into a fish creature, and...
Like you do.
Riker turns into an ape, and Worf turns into we don't entirely know what.
I always considered it caveman Riker, like, you know, Neander Riker, Neanderthal, because he had the, you know, he was a caveman, and it was interesting. Yeah, I don't know what, they never really
and
gave a name.
And best of all, we get Spider Barclay.
That was the cool part, and it was all Barclay's fault,
right?
Barclay's protomorphosis syndrome. Yeah, but they never really said what Klingon, or what Worf turned into, like, what type of ant, well, because, you know, Troy was a salamander, or some newt. Was it another newt? But I don't know. But
some Riker, kind of amphibian.
Riker was basically becoming a caveman, Neanderthal. Picard was going. They each did it at different, you know, rates or intervals, right? Some were further along than others. Picard was all like timid and scared, and he was going to be like a pygmy marmoset, whatever, a little like tiny little.
That would have been adorable.
Mammalian, yeah. You know. Creature, like almost like a little, you know, but we never hear exactly what Worf turns into. It's just like a big exoskeleton Klingon monster thing.
Giant Klingon dung beetle.
I guess the implication is that Klingons, like, evolved to be, like, less, you know, powerful and dangerous. The idea being that, like, you know, in the past, the whatever animal it was the Klingons evolved from, like, their ancestor would have been, like, some kind of armored, you know, juggernaut, just like, you know, and they probably had to lose some of that in order to gain the calories they needed for, you know, the brain power. Because that's
other than Riker, like, Riker basically was devolving in the human, like, timeline, like when you see the graphic of, like, the monkey and then it turns into the guy in the suit with the briefcase or whatever. Like, he was becoming a humanoid caveman, but, like, everybody else was just turning into animals.
Cave Riker.
You know, the fish or the Picard with the little
Spot turns into
rodent.
A lizard.
Right. And so it would have been like the way they say, you know, the humans came up out of the primordial soup, became a fish, then it became a lizard. Then, you know, so it could have been like a giant, you know, Klingon, giant armadillo thing. It's not that it was necessarily a Klingon caveman, but just like some kind of animal thing from Klingon genome history, whatever. But how did they undo that? I mean, I've seen it, but it's been a long time ago. Do you remember how they undid it? Because I don't remember.
They got some stuff out of, like, Ogawa's pregnancy, like
amniotic fluid.
Yeah,
about that. Yeah,
some junk. They got some junk and they put it in the other junk and then they turned it. Because, like, as I recall, the
pregnancy made them undevolve.
Well,
how much
right,
more
because...
trippy do you need?
Because she was pregnant, and like Curiously Queer says, she was becoming like an ape or a monkey primate type. But the fetus, the baby, was unaffected. So Data was like, what's going on here? And then the amniotic fluid stuff. But it was just very cool, you know, crazy, trippy episode. And again, Riker was just like caveman, can't talk, because they gradually started having their issues. But then Klingon Worf thing was always after Troy, and so they had to use the hypo spray with the pheromones to, like, get him to go away, and it was just trippy and crazy and fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent episode. It's part of Brennan Braga's whole idea that, you know, humans can rearrange their bodies at basically the drop of a hat, right? Because the premise, as I recall, is based on the idea that we have a bunch of basically junk DNA left over from previous, you know, species that we have evolved from, and that at least is true to a certain extent. So like, you know, we can trace back along common ancestors, and the disease is like sort of randomly flipping them on or off, which is why like which is why Riker was turning into like what was clearly an earlier form of hominid, which is not a Neanderthal. Incidentally, Neanderthals were about as smart as we were. They were just, you know, they had just different patterns. So, you know, fun fact about Neanderthals. Whereas, like, Barclay was turning into a spider thing. I don't even know if humans have a spider-like creature in our ancestral lineage. I'm pretty sure we devolved from the creature, or we, like, diverged from the creatures that would eventually become spiders much earlier than that. But, you know, who am I to quibble over a disease that makes you rearrange your body by turning on your DNA?
We'll quibble and quabble when an episode makes a little more sense than this one.
Yeah, but so, like, I mean, yeah, you know, it's definitely an odd episode. Once they sort of explain what happened, it's kind of like, okay, I guess that's what happened. And then it sort of just comes down to Picard getting chased through Jeffrey's tubes by Monster Worf. But, you know, sure, I enjoy that as much as the next person.
Yeah, it,
honestly,
seventh season,
who doesn't?
It was trippy and cool. We had a question, did it come out around Halloween time? Nope, it was March 1994 when Genesis aired. We had another, you know, just a couple shout-outs, I guess. We could have a possible trippy nomination for Masks, TNG. Masaka is waking.
Yeah.
Wow.
Corgano. Yep, that was fun, trippy and weird.
I'm actually pretty sure the only Star Trek Halloween episode was Cat's Paw. Which is awful. Just straight up. God damn it, Cat's Paw. It's like, we wanted to make a giant cat, so we took a normal cat and put it in front of a very small door. And it's like, I'm not fooled, Cat's Paw. I know what's up. I can see that is a normal-sized cat.
If we could do, like, a quick speed round, because Grace, you mentioned one that was Troy flying in space. Remember that one?
Yeah, floating through space, Troy. In the dark!
You know, that episode is Night Terrors, and if it wasn't for the Troy floating in space, I think that episode is actually pretty good. If they had just had her, like, walking on the ground in that, like, weird fog and, like, being yelled at by aliens, I think that would have been fairly effective, but the fact that she's, like, floating and it looks so goofy, like, it's that,
well,
I think,
and
is...
She looks so uncomfortable.
Isn't that the one where she's like... When she's floating, she's trying to, like, give a message to somebody or to something, like another mind or she's in contact with or whatever. Because I remember when she's floating, she was supposed to, like, you know, give a message or make contact or say something. And the whole time she's like, hello, anybody there? I need to tell you something about that we're going to talk about. It's like, just get to the point. Tell the person, whatever it would have been, I would have just been shouting the same thing over and over.
Well,
not
Data,
like,
you know,
hello.
Data even said, just tell them now. So she could have just shouted, now!
Over
dumbasses.
And over, right. Are you there? I need to talk to you.
Where
about,
are you?
About something. It's like, come on.
So
stuff is happening!
So yeah, so there's the Troy floating in space. That part is what really drags down the episode, because, like, the rest of it, like, there's some really creepy stuff going on in that episode, like some of the hallucinations they have, like when Crusher is alone in the bay with the corpses and they all, like, sit up and it's like, oh god, blah. Or like Picard getting crushed by the turbo lift. Like, I legitimately, you know, I enjoyed stuff like that. I liked watching the episode. The other issue that I had with it is that the way they need to get out of that rift is by causing an explosion, and apparently their torpedoes are not strong enough, but combining hydrogen with another element will do the job. And it's like, guys, do you understand antimatter? Like, this is your show. You wrote that your ships use antimatter to go. Antimatter produces way more energy than any amount of hydrogen. Like, the idea that this hydrogen explosion is somehow going to produce more energy than their torpedoes was absurd. Like, if I had tried to run this for a role-playing game, my PCs would have had that figured out in, like, 2 seconds flat and been out. And they would have been like, alright, done. We blow up the Britain, which was the other ship that they were floating next to, and now we're out.
Oh, I just had another one just hit me out of the, like, randomly right now. What about the TNG episode Emergence. Do you guys remember that? Just from the title?
Oh yeah,
that's my memory.
New Vertiform City. They're all on the train, and the train people will keep them out of the main car, but they all want to go to New Vertiform City, and the crew has to, like, you know, pretend they're part of the train people and get their ticket. And it basically is the episode where the Enterprise computer whole systems are freaking out, and it's all in the holodeck. And then at the end, the Enterprise, like, spits out this crazy life form thing that just floats off and goes away. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, that's...
Nope.
That's the episode where the Enterprise just randomly creates a sentient life form and then sends it off into space.
Oh, yeah! Yeah.
But, like, through the whole episode, it's all on this holodeck train, and they're like, we're going to New Vertiform City. I just always remember that, and there was, like, the holodeck-created characters, like the conductor... The ticket, you know, the guy taking the ticket. There was, like, you know, dock worker crew, like, guys with wrenches, and, like, they're guarding the. It was just trippy. I'm like, I was digging it when I remember first watching it the first time. I'm like, I don't know what they're doing, but I'm on the ride. Like, I'm going for a ride on this train. And then it turned out that the Enterprise did that thing. And I'm like, whoa, that's trippy.
Yeah, you know, just, hey, just Enterprise has a baby. That's apparently someone thought that was a good premise for an episode.
Oh, and it was cool because it starts off, Data is, you know, doing Prospero on the holodeck, and it's all dark, and Data's got crazy long hair and a goatee and a mustache, and he's doing Shakespeare, doing Prospero. And then Picard, like, walks up and is, like, you know, going, oh, very good, and interesting interpretation and all this. And then all of a sudden, like, a train is coming at them from a distance, and Picard's like, Data, did you make a train? And it's like, no, I didn't make it. And it just went on from there. It's like, whoa, the Enterprise is freaking out.
Data, why did you put a train in my Shakespeare program?
All right. I didn't put a train in the Shakespeare program. Why did you put a Shakespeare program in my train program?
That's a good inspiration for a program.
No. Right.
All
right.
So I think we have reached the end of our discussion on the trippiest episodes of Star Trek. I know there are more trippy episodes we haven't done, but those were the ones.
I have to say, I shouldn't end it on a bad note. So let's just keep. I was going to say the Chakotay's spirit vision box electronic. That was just a bad trip, but let's move on. Let's pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, nothing about Chakotay vision quests is a good idea. Although Shran is suggesting the episode
Chakotay
Hatchery.
Quest.
Shran is suggesting.
Did
the
they
episode...
visit a salmon farm?
In Hatchery? No, I believe. If I know the episode he's talking about, it's the one where they find a Zindi like crashed insectoid ship, and like Archer gets like infected by the insectoid baby eggs or what have you, and like becomes like super protective of the nest, and like. Is like threatening to blow up the Enterprise to keep the baby, like, you know, the insectoid eggs safe. Which is, you know, a pretty decent episode overall. It shows how much the rest of the crew really, really don't like Major Hayes, because he's like, you know, they're like, we may have to overthrow the captain, and we could just tell Hayes that he's got like alien bugs, but we're not going to because we don't trust him. And I guess they don't trust Hayes to not rat them out if the captain has alien bugs in him. So, you know, definitely a weird episode. I don't know if I'd go so far to say it was trippy, but who knows?
I like the idea. We've touched on every series, like pretty much all the series, TNG, Voyager, DS9. This is a good thing. Like, what's a trippy Enterprise? And I don't remember that episode, but if I was just right now thinking, no, okay, I haven't seen all of it or only seen some of them once, like, what's trippy Enterprise? My first thought was zombie Vulcans. I tripped out and thought that I liked it. I went with the trip, but I was like, whoa, that's trippy. Zombie Vulcans episode. So we got all the live action TV shows. Do you guys off the cuff, do you have a trippy TAS episode, the animated series?
All of it was pretty trippy, I'd say.
Yeah, the whole thing.
You'd
is
be
just...
more hard pressed to find an episode that wasn't trippy.
Like, it feels weird because, like, the pacing and, like, the timing of everything is wrong. Like, that's the biggest thing I noticed when I watched the animated series, is that, like, everything happens super disjointedly, like, where you feel like something else was supposed to happen, but instead they cut to the next scene, or, like, the scene drags on for way too long. It's just, the whole thing feels very odd. Like, especially the episode with Bem, the guy who can, like, separate his arms and legs from his body, and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like... those
crazy.
You know, all those episodes are all, like, weird and trippy and hard to watch, because they're just, like, they're so... They're just constructed so badly.
Well, and on Facebook, somebody posts, you know, pictures with funny quotes or comments or whatever, with screenshots of Trek, and they just recently posted one where it was from the animated series, and McCoy, and I think it was Kirk, or I forget the two characters, but I know McCoy was in there. They were just sitting on, like, a big rug in, like, a palace or, like, some alien big... hall or whatever, and there was a big ass dragon right next to them, and it's like, okay, they're sitting with the dragon, that's cool. But
why not just dragon that. Right there,
he's their host, I guess. They're just being polite.
So there you go, now we have something, or at least touched on every series of Star Trek, including the animated series. But you know what, it's fun. Some of these are not so great for storytelling, or just like, we kind of think, were the writers tripping on something? What were they thinking? What were they consuming? But I just want to say...
don't know.
That's what makes Trek fun. I mean, there's the awesome episodes that, like, hit us in the feels, that touch our hearts. There's the ones that make us think and, you know, touch on philosophy, human dilemma, you know. But then there's just the crazy fun ones that are like, what is this?
Just the ones that are straight up weird.
So I love the good Trek, the bad Trek, the trippy Trek. You know, that's why I had fun thinking of this episode, and you know, that's the thing. Not every episode is going to be the best episode, and so you're going to get some crazy sci-fi action.
Of course.
Well, wise words, David. And so that, I think, will bring this episode of All Things Trek to a close. Next week, we will be joined by some friends to discuss the story of Star Trek Online, especially some of the new stuff that's been happening recently. So if you're tired of hearing me talk, you should listen to next episode, because I don't know anything about the story of Star Trek Online, so I'll mainly just be going, huh? And what?
Well, and I think, you know, obviously we're going to touch on a lot of it, but I think there are Trek, and I've seen it myself, whether it's at... just in the chat rooms or online, Facebook, Twitter, but I've even spoken to people at like Star Trek Las Vegas convention that they know Star Trek Online is out there. They just have no clue. Like, they've never played online games, or they never played Stowe, and they're like, they're curious, but they're, you know, apprehensive, or you just, you know, so it'll be fun. I think it'll be good for people that don't play Stowe to maybe get interested in it. Some good stuff for people that have maybe left, and then, what, you know, decide maybe it's time to come back. So it should be fun. We've got some good guests, and I'm looking forward to that one too.
All right, excellent. Well, we hope you'll join us then. Until next week, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.